you lived your life like you want your life to be? Did you pass the blame, get lost on a runaway train? Hello and welcome to the Privileged Man podcast. My name is Esben Baring and I'm your host. On this podcast, you're going to hear about the experiences of men and women who became aware of and found ways to break free from the molds of expectation, to live their lives adventurously and truthfully, and discover their true selves along the way. These sovereign souls are sharing the insights they had that led them to be unapologetically who they are. These conversations are rich with moments of realization, transformation, and insight that can inspire the willingness to look at your life in new and refreshing ways. My guest today is Ben Bidwell. Ben is a human potential coach and breathwork healer who helps others find the magic within themselves to live a more purposeful and fulfilling life. Having been on his own journey from a masked man unconsciously drawn to toxic behaviors to an awakened and open soul, his story is deeply authentic and relatable. As a coach, he helps others open their hearts to find the magic within so that they can live a more fulfilling existence. In doing so, he is now seen to be pioneering a revolution in helping people open up and connect more deeply with their emotions in a powerful and liberating way. His work has seen him receive significant press from leading publications such as Hello, The Independent, Forbes, Grazia, Happiful, Esquire, The Evening Standard, and Men's Health. Welcome, Ben, to the Privileged Man podcast. It's lovely to see you again, man. So I came across you, Ben, through an acquaintance, actually. Someone I was in a coaching conversation with at the time, and they said they'd come across this man called Ben Bidwell, the Naked Professor, which is, I think, I know, I see the look on your face, but I think the word naked is relevant. And I think about our physical nakedness and our bodily form, but I think about exposing the heart into a depth of nakedness. And you and I both use the words conformity in some of our writings. And would you speak a little bit to what you understand conformity to be, how you perhaps squeeze the essence of who you are into a form and then broke out of that form, and what you've perhaps discovered a little bit along your way?
You know, we all try and conform in our own ways. I think that's the important part. Depending on our experiences as a child, where there was lack, and I tried to conform in a way that I desperately was seeking validation. I was desperately seeking acceptance. I was desperately seeking to be received, and that's because that was lacking for me as a child, and I didn't have any of that inside of me. There was no form of acceptance. There was no level of self-love. So my mission became to get that acceptance in whatever form I could. And when I looked around at society and the message that I was shown, just naturally, not that I was taught it at school, but just what I received from the world was, if I was to be accepted, if I was to be validated as a man, then I needed to conform into these traditional masculine values, which I saw as being strong and tough and unemotional and brave and make stuff happen. And, you know, I always come back to this place, sadly, that takes me to this belief that I had that it was cooler to be the bully than it was to be the one who was bullied. And my natural energy inside of me felt that actually I was more susceptible to being bullied because I was soft and I was gentle and I was sensitive and I was all these things that I believed a man shouldn't be from what I saw if I wanted to thrive. And so I put on that mask. I tried to be everything that I wasn't, and that was my effort to conform, to fit in. And it caused pain. It didn't. I was never aligned. I was never in flow. I was never just allowed to be myself, because I always had to try. I had to try to be something that didn't authentically fit me. And that was what conformity was for me. It was trying to fit in.
It's so interesting, isn't it? And like, when we think of the words authenticity and being who we are, this to me is an unraveling and an unfolding process. Like, what the hell does it mean? Be yourself now, after having lived through thought forms and beliefs and ideals of a family, of a society, of a school, what does it truly mean to be who I am? And for me, it feels like pulling together these different fragments or aspects of myself that I discarded or judged, or, to be quite honest, felt that I couldn't feel. So for me, the journey into integration and being who I am is aligning the divine spark of the inner child with the strength and the tenderness and the power of the man. So who are you as you're being yourself, Ben? What does that mean to you, for anyone who's listening?
Thank you. Yeah, I'd just love to just expand on what you just said there, because I remember, you know, my early 20s or even my teens, you know, the advice you so often got if you had to go and do something big was just go and be yourself, isn't it? It's just, if you got an interview, just go and be yourself. Or if you go on a date, just go and be yourself. And it always used to confuse me. I was like, yeah, but if I go and be myself, I'm really likely to just go and blow this. I'm going to say something stupid and ridiculous. And because I didn't know myself, and I was so entangled into my conditioning as to who I thought I had to be. It just was one big mess. And so that's been my journey, is to untangle who I really am over the last 10 years. Who I really am is very different to who I was trying to be. So being myself, and I believe this to be true for all humans, not just me, but, you know, ultimately when I remove or let go of the fear of who I'm meant to be, I just come back to a space of love. And love and freedom to just express actually from a place of flow of just what is true. Like I can't try to be anything. It's just of what is naturally, most deeply, authentically me. And when I say that, and I say without fear, because ultimately I believe that's what we all are underneath it all, is who are we without fear? Who are we when there's nothing judged, when we are just allowing ourselves? Or I take myself back into the kitchen, and if some music comes on and there's no one around me, who am I then? And I'm a man who loves to move and to dance and to play and to just be in that space. But someone comes in and looks at me, and suddenly I become who I should be. And it's straight and rigid and like, oh, I'm not dancing. You know, I'm cool. I'm you know, and you put on the emotional straitjacket. And what I see, and the difference between those two is that I am really myself in that moment when no one is watching, when I'm just allowing myself. Can I transfer that so that when someone does walk in and looks at me, I can still be that person? I still have that freedom to maintain that person, yeah, without being swayed into the judgment of getting lost and potentially being embarrassed or wondering how I'm being perceived. That's the pureness.
Yeah, I've started to do this practice in Bali, actually. I ride around on my motorbike and I put on music on my headphones that I absolutely love. And I'm tone deaf when it comes to achieving a harmony or a melody. But I've got my earphones on and I am belting out the words at such strength. And people look at me with such surprise, but I am so immune to it in that moment because I'm in the experience of my utter joy, and I almost feel protected wearing the headphones. And I watch people's reactions because it's interesting, and I can feel the pangs of oh, but invariably people's faces light up at the reckless abandon of the expression. And so for me, you know, everything about this journey I'm on, Ben, is about expression. I spent most of my life embarrassed, shy, nervous, melancholy, mild to moderately depressed, unless I was having a drink or a line of coke or having sex or in a love, intoxicating love relationship, which I thought was intoxicating love relationship. And so for me, you know, being who I am is a journey back into feeling. It's actually trying things on for size. What does it feel like to sing a song without a care in the world? What does it feel like to go to a dance floor, an ecstatic dance floor, and to dance freely? And to let myself go, to let the body move, however random and wild and weird that is, what would that feel like? And for me, it's a real journey. I remember, you know, going back to 12, 13 years old and pony club dances and the boys on one side and the girls on the other side, and just absolute terror, nervousness, shyness about girls. But and I never really, I learned to drink to get rid of those nerves. But like, what would it mean to interact with a woman, for example, sober, and to be with the feelings, to take a woman out on a date or be on the dance floor, and just to let her know I'm feeling quite a lot of excitement, which is feeling a little bit fearful, and I just want to sit there and be with that and stay connected in that experience and be with that together. You know, and I feel as though that's just showing up as the fullness of who I am as a man. Even if I'm feeling fear, I can turn it into confidence. But for me, it's as a 44-year-old, I feel as though I'm going through the journey of an 8-year-old again, and with the willingness to feel all the discomfort as the body becomes comfortable expressing itself again in its fullness.
Yeah, that's so beautiful, and I'm so with you. And that's freedom for me. And the crazy part to this is that that's what people want to see in us, and that's what we seek ourselves. But all the blocks and all the fears just prevent us allowing ourselves to be free, and also allowing people to experience that freedom within us. And like you say, when you're on your bike and you're singing and you're just expressing without fear, without concern for judgment, just allowing to express what is naturally inside of you, it's beautiful. And they see it and they feel that and they radiate off that, and you're free. But how many people live in that space? And I'd love to touch on that, actually, because what you just said, you know, that party, you know, dancing and the fear, and then learning to just drink alcohol to remove the fear. And it's such a natural path. So many of us go through it, right? It's absolutely what I did too. And I really believe that all men would love to have that freedom at an ecstatic dance party, to be able to just dance and move and just to be free. All men, categorically, everywhere, all men, all women. It's naturally within us. Look at kids, they want to move. But we're so conditioned, and I speak from my own experience, so conditioned. I went through a period where I just thought, I don't like dancing. It's just not for me.
That's
purely my judgment had become so strong that I believed it to be my truth. When the reality was, it was purely fear. It was just the strength of the fear that I'd embodied for so long that it felt like me. But it's not. And I see so many people that believe that they are their fears. They really believe that's who they are. And it's not. It's really not. It's just where they've learned to be. And that for me is really sad. And I speak from my experience, and because I live that pain.
Yeah.
I can see it.
And I had Robert Masters on the podcast a week ago, and he's a psycho-spiritual guide, and he's been working in men's groups and couples groups for about 40 years. And we touched on it being the edge. And I said, you know, what is your edge? And he goes, the edge is where you're right at the limit of your comfort, and that's where the growth occurs. And so what are some of your edges that you've met, Ben, along the way? What was the last edge? What was the first edge you met as you started to break free from conformity? And what was the last edge you met in the last few days, weeks, month that was a breakthrough for you? I'd love to hear.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the first edge was just sharing, speaking my truth, you know, expressing my feelings, all these things that I'd wrapped, buried, denied, actually finally taking ownership of them, speaking my truth, because the fear of that is just so strong. You know, that it's now your whole identity has been questioned. Everything that your ego is holding on to, suddenly you're now taking control of it and expressing it. So that was the first part, but really so liberating, and I felt so seen and so connected when I stepped into that space.
Do you remember what you expressed at that time?
Yeah, so I went to something called the Landmark Forum. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, have you done it?
I haven't done it. I've done something quite similar called Avatar, but no, I have never done Landmark there.
Okay, so it's like really mixed things. I mean, there's good things and bad things to it. But for me, the good was I made a commitment to myself that I was going to show up on that experience. And if there was something within me, that I would express it, because I knew I'd been working with a coach at that point, just the early part of it. And I knew that was part of my journey. So just, I remember just going there and just putting my hand up to express, to share, to stand up, even if it scared the hell out of me, I was going to express it. And that was what I did. And I remember just the feeling of aliveness in my body, and coming away from this 3 days just being like, what is going on? Like this energy, this new energy inside of me. So that was the start for me of experienced connection, because I never experienced connection to the depth of where I was fully seen. The connection I experienced was just nice. It was like, I like you, you're a nice person, and it's easy, and we could talk about things. There was never a letting into my actual truth of going into that place. So that was the start of my moving into my edges, and obviously a big part of the journey. Most recently, I'm constantly trying to grow and expand what comes to me. I mean, things like cold water is a really simple, obvious one. Just, you know, that's a constant edge that I try and test every day. Every day that fear comes up. I don't want to do this. And every day I do it. But things like with my coaching, expanding myself in the place of just, like I've just started my breathwork healing coaching, which is just sitting in a space and taking people into the depths of who they are and holding that space and seeing them writhe, seeing them become something new, seeing them experience things that they buried, that they suppressed, and sitting with them and holding that space. And that's always expanding, becoming more and more comfortable with that. These are all edges. Dancing is a big edge for me still. Yesterday, I got invited to an ecstatic dance party in 2 weeks' time. And, you know, there is that always that fear. It's like, oh, God, am I going to be the worst one there? It's, you know, I know all this kind of stuff. And so there's all these little things, but it becomes harder. I find it becomes harder to push those edges.
You're just touching on something you said back when you started with the Landmark Forum. Did you feel safe in that environment when you made a commitment to yourself, and I love that. When I remember making the same commitment to myself, which is when I went along to one of these workshops, mine was with Jamie Catter. He was delivering an intimacy workshop here in Bali. And I knew I had to meet myself. My heart was absolutely pumping. And for me, it was always public speaking. Getting up and using my voice in any way, shape, or form terrified me. Not only that, but I hated the sound of my own voice. I'd listen to it back and I'd be like, ugh, that's revolting. I had no idea of how much judgment I was in against who I am and what I had to say. So I lived in like an encased shell, Ben, for so fucking long because I had so much fear about speaking up and out. And we can sort of touch on the old adage of children being seen and not heard. Well, what the hell is that messaging doing to young boys that are becoming men? Fuck me. You know? And the funny thing is that there's actually no seeing and there's no hearing. So the child might as though not exist. And so, yeah, being heard for me is a big thing. And it's sort of ironic that I'm on a podcast with you now as I'm starting to flex my vocal cords to see what comes through. Safety has always been a big thing for me because there wasn't necessarily safety for me at school or around my family because my family weren't equipped with emotional intelligence either to understand the natural exuberance and energy of a hyperactive child that I was. And I have no judgment against them because I still find myself being triggered by my beautiful young 8-year-old daughter because of her immense power and energy and feeling, which I'm still learning to meet deeper aspects of myself. But what I would say is safety, and to be in a space where there is absolutely no judgment whatsoever, but full acceptance creates, as you well know, the space for the emergence of what may be lying hidden or which may be scared to express. And so I've been taking small steps. And what I realize is that there's always a story attached to the emotion that I'm trying to express. And it's never the story, it's the feeling that seeks expression. So when I talk about vulnerability, it comes back to like being a man and either having a huge sexual prowess or extraordinary status and admiration from material gains and success in the material world, in the monetary world. And life brought me these wonderful opportunities to find insecurity around my sexuality and a situation where I ran out of money. So I had to face myself as a man. Well, who am I? What am I made of? And I don't have these two things that I've grown up and learned and conditioned to be are what defines me as a man. So that's been a big part of my journey. And you asked me about my last edge. I take part in a 12-step program, which is helping me restore some of my emotional sobriety. And it's designed in such a clever way to create the conditions to come through guilt, to come through fear, to come through shame, and to lay bare the grief that lies beneath it all. And I, as part of my edge, I did some body work to find out about entitlement and superiority and how I learned through my conditioning to look down at everyone. So everyone was beneath me, regardless of what the color of your skin was, your sexuality, your gender, everyone was beneath me because I was conditioned to be a privileged white male. And I never knew that that sense of entitlement was a way of protecting the deeper insecurity and worthlessness that I felt. But as part of this program, I found it. And this woman, this body worker, helped me to express that. And after expressing the disgust that I felt for holding these beliefs and retching energetically up the shame for holding these beliefs, my heart broke open into grief, grief that I'd been in such judgment against so many other people, which was actually separating me from the divine and who I truly am. So for me, it's been accessing the grief and being able to express it in front of other people. So I go to this group once a week and I really lean in because I want to learn something new about myself, because I want to free myself from the confines of my self-created prison. So for me, it's finding the grief, being willing to be with the grief, be okay with the grief, and then to feel such a connection to other people as a result of having grieved a lost childhood, which it is in my experience. So yeah, that's my edge. And I think, you know, to public speaking, being willing to get up and share a story. You know, I look at you with great admiration for your ability to command presence on a honest stage and be vulnerable. You know, for me, I never understood the courage it takes to be with those feelings. Do you still find that when you get up on stage that there's a vulnerability to who you are and what you're sharing?
Yeah, as I start speaking, I always look to own that, because that's what gives me the freedom. So I'd always start my talks wherever I am with an ownership of how I'm feeling, of the fear. You know, the I don't know how this is going to go, and I'm scared. Beautiful. You know, everyone's looking at me, and I don't know how this is going to go.
I love that. And that's so cool.
It's kind of freaky. Yeah, it's funny. And sometimes I just stand in silence at the beginning as part of my, and I just look at everybody for a minute, and I think it's more freaky for them than it is for me. And that they don't know if they've lost their voice. In fact, I did it once in a prison to male inmates, and I stood there and I wanted to just be so present with them, to let myself be seen, to create an air of tension, to really sit in the vulnerability. And I stood there in silence and they just completely ignored me and just chatted amongst themselves. And kind of, I think they looked up every now and then thinking, is this guy going to do anything? Is he going to say something? Until they started shouting at me, going, say something, do something. What are you doing? And I kind of realized that it was almost creating the opposite effect, and it was almost kind of becoming like headmaster role. I'm not going to speak until you lot shut up. So I really had to kind of, but always the point of this, what I'm saying is that always I just, when I'm on stage, I want to own it all. So in that place, even then, it's like, okay, like what I'm trying to do here is be present with you. I'm just trying to stand here in silence. I want to be with you here. And there's nothing more to it than that. So please don't judge me. I'm here to be seen, just like we all are here. And I get goosebumps saying that now, because for me, just that ability to own it, that gives me the freedom. It's like I've owned the stuff now. Now we can connect. Now we can talk. I'm not standing here trying to be anything other than I'm not. And I'm scared, just like you are sometimes. But the other part to it is that I'll also own the fact that whenever I'm on my way to do a talk, there's always two voices. And this applies to so many areas of my life. There's two voices. There's one voice on the way that says, what are you doing, Ben? You're not good enough to do this talk. Is anyone going to listen? Does anyone even care? Are you even any good at this? Do you even know what you're talking about? You could just be sat at home on the sofa. Why are you putting yourself through this in front of everybody else? Very much the same way if you play sports. Like I had that before I played a game of rugby. All this kind of stuff. Why are you doing this? Just stay at home. You're not good enough for this stuff. So that was one voice. And that's alive still today, having done countless talks. Yeah. The other voice is this sense of aliveness, the sense of purpose, the sense of, this is, here we go. Like, what an opportunity. What a beautiful chance to stand in front of people, to share, to express, to try and make an impact. What you're living, your purpose. Like, there's a real aliveness to that. And for me, what do I feel into? And this is in life. Like, do I feel into that fear? And do I feel into that voice? And do I embody that voice? And do I talk it out and go, God, yeah, I'm really not good enough, am I? This is going to be really embarrassing. Like, yo, oh my goodness. And go through all that. Rah, rah, rah. Or do I feel into this? What an opportunity. What an opportunity to stand here. And right, whichever energy I feel into before my talk, if I play that voice and have a chat with it, I would stand there on stage and I would nervously like be like, oh my God, how's this going to go? This is a nightmare. And I'd embody that and people would see it and it'd be nerves. if I embody that sense of what an opportunity, I'm here, this is my purpose, and I breathe that in and I stand there, that's when I stand there in silence and I can just look at everybody and I can breathe in this, I'm here and this is, I'm present to this. This is an opportunity for me now and I'm going to be with you. And it's just like, there's always those two stories within us all in so many ways, of particularly when we're trying to grow, particularly when we're approaching that edge. What do we lean into? What do we feel? What do we embody? How do we want to show up? And public speaking is a great one for that, because the voices are really loud both ways. So it's a real opportunity for me to constantly push that edge.
And great practice for not giving two shits about what anyone thinks as well.
Yeah.
which strikes me as ultimate liberation. You know, as long as I'm quote unquote not being a dick. So as long as I'm being kind and my intentions are coming from a place of love, I may well upset people, but it's none of my business if I upset people, because I spent my whole life being Mr. Nice Guy. In fact, I was such a chameleon that I would morph into whatever I thought I needed to morph into in a room, and I would be able to sell ice to an Eskimo from that place. And it was so believable. It felt like I was being authentic because I didn't know any other way. So when we come to this question of authenticity and inauthenticity and being who we are, I'm like, well, hang on a second. I've got to figure out who the false self is first, the one that manipulates, that controls, that is conniving, is mischievous, you know, the shadow aspects of the magician, I guess, because I've mastered those. So what does it look like to own up to all of that? And like you say, walk into a room and be so present that it's felt. And what I found too is like looking into someone's eyes, or looking into a group that I'm doing a workshop with, their eyes, or looking into an audience I'm speaking to, just to connect that sense of depth and like okay, there's a feeling in this room, there's an energy in this room, and we're going to create that together. And I like what you say also, it's like that moment of silence when you don't say anything, it can and looking at people in the audience, you know, people can get suddenly concerned, they might be called on to answer a question, so the attention, the focus comes off us onto the audience, which I think is fascinating. And it's playing with the energy and playing with the emotion, which I enjoy now. So
yeah,
how do you help people with fear? I mean, you know, we speak about self-love and true self-love, and are we choosing love? You know, on my journey to self-love, I'm still learning, quite honest with you, because I can still be an irritable, impatient, difficult person. And I can also be so open-hearted, so loving, so kind, so tender. And I keep on, you know, flicking between the two. And one moment it's contraction, it's fear, and the next moment it's just gargantuan love. How do you help people to distinguish between self-love and fear and contraction, and the ability to choose between the two?
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? That's the work. That's the game for me. Like you say, it's still alive for me too. It's not to say when you do this work, you're just one ball of just lightness and nothing ever enters into your sphere. It's fear is going to be a natural part of us always. For me, it starts with compassion. So in terms of helping people, really sitting in a space and seeing them without judgment and letting them know that it's all welcome, it's all okay, because it's the only way they're going to be able to take ownership, is to really feel like I'm there with them and I can allow them. I'm not judging them. I'm so happy to sit with them in that space, and perhaps to lead them in that way is for me to own that in the first place. So that's a big part of why I really try and show up from a vulnerable place, because I want to see the vulnerability in other people. I want to feel their truths. And if someone says, it's like, I mean, a really simple level. If I say to you, how you doing? And you go, I'm fine, thanks. How are you? I'll probably just go, I'm fine, thanks too. You know, it's probably unlikely if you say I'm fine, thanks, and then you say, how are you back? That I'm going to go into the depths of my truth, because it doesn't feel like that's the space. But if I mean, it's possible. Some people will just own it and take it on anyway, but it doesn't tend to just flow that way. If you ask me how I am and I give you my full answer and the truth and the highs and the lows and everything that I'm experiencing, your response is very likely to perhaps follow that, go, actually, yeah. But if I'm honest, this is where I'm at a little bit more. So just giving that permission, so sitting in that space, leading from that place, showing that there's compassion, showing that there's a lack of judgment for either myself or for them, to allow them to sit with it. Now we're opening the doors to perhaps have a conversation that isn't necessarily always the way. And from that place, we get to own our fears rather than the fears owning us. All the time that we're suppressing those fears, we're not talking about them, not bringing them alive. They're just sitting there festering, coming out when they choose, coming out when they're pushed, when their wound is just irritated. And it's owning them in that place. So can we swap that? Can we take the ownership? Can we have this space? Or actually, we really bring this to the table in our own way and sit with it, release the shame. Shame can't withstand compassion. You can't sit in shame if no one's shaming you, if we're all okay with it, if we're not judging it. And that it's just such a beautiful space for me. It's an honor. It's a privilege to be able to do that. But it's not the common world, is it? It's not, these are not the spaces that are natural in our society.
No, they're not. And it sort of boggles the mind that we have to go on retreat or workshop or hire a coach in order to safely express ourselves. And so much of what Pete and I are doing with The Privileged Man is to reframe privilege to the idea that men can get together in a connected space, a safe space, and be vulnerable together and rediscover the love that lies in the hearts by being willing to feel through what we've all just discussed about shame, fear, and guilt, and all the rest. You know, yes, society can be clumsy. Yes, families can be clumsy. None of us are perfect. I'm also really interested by the internalized shame that so many of us carry, you know, the voice in your head that says you're not good enough to play rugby, you know, your body isn't as good as it should be, even though your body's beautiful, Ben. But, you know, the inside dialogue, you know, the self-shaming, which can be so damaging and excruciatingly painful, just to raise awareness around it, you know, so much of men's mental health and giving men a voice is to realize that, fuck, I've been to the edge of suicide. I know what it feels like for a man to put a gun in his head or stand on the edge of a building and throw himself off. I know what it feels like. And people say, speak up. Well, do you know what? When you're in that state, the last thing you're going to do is call for help. The last thing you're going to do is speak up and say for help, because you're beyond help. You're irreparable. You are damaged, defective, broken, worthless, beyond it. So I survived that experience of my life because I happened to be surrounded by people who understood and were deeply concerned about me. And because, like you said at the beginning, I was committed to healing. So I'd made a very intentional decision to heal from the effects of alcoholism. And there was a pathway laid in front of me. And as part of that pathway, there were aspects that meant meeting or having the dark night of the soul. So I actually did ask for help, and I needed the help, because if I hadn't had the help, going through that, it made more sense to take my life than to choose life. And so much of that agony was internalized. It wasn't coming from outside of me. It was something that I was carrying within me. And I just think it's so important that we have the conversation around self-abnegation, self-loathing, merciless condemnation of the self, merciless judgment, to realize that it is commonplace. And we don't have to hide. We can actually reveal these aspects of ourselves and then be loved in them. So you're not going to judge me for thinking less of myself, Ben. You're just going to hold me there with that beautiful smile on your face, open-hearted, and probably give me a gigantic hug if I ask for it. And then I can feel fucking safe with you, and I might even cry. And I love you for that. I fucking love you as my brother who understands with a gigantic, compassionate heart that I'm not alone. And that's what I'd like to really impress upon anyone listening, what's possible, because we men are beautiful, and you know we need each other.
Mm. Yeah, beautiful brother. Absolutely, we are. And you know, we all crave connection as human beings. It's innately within us, and fear is a real blocker of connection. Fear is a prevention of allowing someone into your deeper parts. It's a protective shield. It's an armor, and I don't know, there's only so much we can be attracted to someone who's wearing armor, right? We can't see them. We can't look into them. We can't feel them to the same level. It's a shield. And I'm really intrigued by the whole aspect of relationship. And it's something actually I'm really battling with. I'm going through it as we speak, in terms of I seek deep connection, and I know I seek deep connection. I know that's there on my deepest values, but fear still keeps me. Fear still shows up for me in that space. Fear still tries to steal me away from going there in deep relationship and committing, because it still tries to lead me to temptation. It's still saying, but that is so shiny and fun for a moment. And he's sure, like, this is kind of, there's all sorts of challenges around staying in this place. And so for me, I see that in so many men. You know, the lust is a real thing, and lust is a real thing. Like, it's going to be there, but can we sit with the lust, or is the lust going to own us, and we're going to go and do something about it, and take us away from what is so like actually innately what we really seek? And I see it in so many men, and I have these conversations, and I'm owning this in myself, that we seek deep connection, but fear takes us away, and fear takes us towards lust, and we make mistakes, we self-sabotage, we do things that we know inside of our heart we don't want to do. It's not who we are, it's not what we really seek, but something is saying, go do this. And it gives us a moment of, like, first quenching satisfaction and then emptiness, because we've just lost who we actually aim to be. And so for me as a man in this experience, it's not about trying to suppress all of this and to pretend that I don't have these challenges, that I don't have these powerful lusts that can take me away from who I am, that I don't have these desires that for things that I know aren't healthy for me. It's about sitting in that space and owning that, and looking at where that comes from, understanding why it's there, vocalizing it, working with someone who could hold that space for me, even as a coach, so that I can unpack it. Right then, now I'm owning it. I'm owning my limitations. I'm owning the fact that I'm not perfect, and I'm still on this journey just like anyone else. Because I'm unpacking this stuff is what will take me closer to what my deepest values are, which is better connections, better relationships, feeling more seen, and being able to see the person next to me more deeply, to feel more alive internally. Because with that aliveness, so many things are resolved. You know, addictions so often come because there's that lack inside. We don't know how to connect. I've gone off on all sorts of tangents here, but what I'm saying is that connection is such a vital part of us, our human experience, and we all have wounds that will take us away from our connections. That's not the problem. The problem is our inability to sit and own that, and to be able to vocalize it, to talk about it, just like you said, and to let it be seen, let it be aired, and to not feel judged for that, but to feel empowered because I'm now taking this step to move beyond this.
And I assume you're talking about monogamy when you're with a woman and you're in a monogamous exclusive relationship, and then you feel the energy of sexual desire come up as your body, or the body naturally responds to another body. I mean, I guess there's a difference between the body naturally responding to another body and then the body responding to a fantasy in the mind, which is a different energy, right? I mean, we're animals. I mean, with the possibility to self-actualize and know God, that, you know, the body itself is an animal. And so, you know, for me, for so long, I judged my sexual energy as being wrong somehow. So I was shaming and guilting myself into fear sexually without even realizing that I was doing it, from a very, very, very young age. And I've spoken quite openly on the Sasha Cobra podcast about that, because it's so freeing for me to speak so honestly and openly and candidly about that. And, you know, what does it look like to be in a loving, committed relationship with a woman and to be attracted by another woman and to speak openly and honestly about that and bring that energy of intimacy into the relationship and say, this is what's happening to me. How liberating, how freeing is that? There's nothing wrong there. And yeah, sure, it may be triggering for one or both partners. I often get very triggered in a small, possessive, jealous, and deeply insecure way. And I'm like, well, there's an opportunity to feel something there that I haven't looked at yet. Oh, yuck, bring that one on. But I just think it's so healthy. And I'd never understood that was possible before until it was possible. And so it showed me how limited I was being in honesty, quite honestly speaking. It's like, I denied so many aspects of my feeling state that I couldn't really be honest because I didn't know what honest really was. And so, yes, it's open spaces where we can talk about sexuality and we can talk about fear and we can talk about shame and realize we've all got stories, and none of our stories are really much worse than anyone else. Well, it depends on how you relate the story, but I'm happy to admit that I've done some shameful things and I'm able to feel my shame. I'm happy to report that I have felt guilty because I've done some things that I'd rather I hadn't, which I can now correct. And sometimes I'm terrified as a man, and that's okay too. And sometimes I need help from other people, and sometimes I need help from my creator, because it's beyond the help of other people. Tell me a little bit about spirituality in your life, Ben, and the breath. And yeah, tell me, do you have faith? Do you have a relationship with God or creator or universe, nature? What does God mean to you?
I never really associate with a God, if I'm honest. No, that's just my connection, my journey, my understanding. It's all perspective, isn't it? I believe in, you know, I often refer to the universe and something outside, but for me, these are all the kind of spiritual laws that ultimately the law of attraction that perhaps is almost beyond our rational understanding. But actually, you know, now there's more and more science coming around all this stuff. We're really understanding that, you know, our thoughts do impact our body at a really basic level, and we do invite things in through that way of being. And so I believe in the magnetism of our energy and the universe rewarding that and inviting it back. But ultimately for me, spirituality is just a connection to our deeper self, to what is innately true within us, not what is conditioned within our mind. And that is the journey for me.
And you know, we speak of energy and emotion being energy in motion. I mean, so what I'm super curious about is, like, if we are repressed, suppressed, depressed, and energy isn't moving fluidly through the body, which I suspect, you know, with the breath work you're teaching and coaching with, it gives an opportunity to move the energy and for the energy to be expressed. Well, if energy is in motion constantly and we're shutting it down in any way, I think to spiritual qualities such as love and compassion and understanding and acceptance and... Well, if we're shut down to energy, emotion, then we're actually shut down to the possibility to connect to spirit in whatever form and understanding we take that for in life. And so that's been really interesting to me, is how can I have faith if I'm unable to sense and feel and know something more deep and mysterious is out there in life? And it's only since I've started to feel that I would say I have a true faith that's emerging and growing in me, whatever that is, but it's something inexplicable and it's mysterious, and yet I know it's there now.
And isn't that beautiful?
It is,
and it allows for an element of trust for me, and just trusting, you know, and really allowing that. I know it's a cliche, but everything is just unraveling how it's meant to, and just trusting that whole process. For example, when I hear you talk about, you know, your communication and you know, being heard was a big thing for you. And when I look at you without judgment, but without knowing you, without knowing in your wounds, and what I see is a man who's so strong in his communication and so powerful in his communication. And when we trust and we look at the universe and we look at everything unraveling, you know, your wounds are what have made you to communicate in that way, because there's something inside of you, I must communicate well. Must be heard, and it's created this powerful man who can communicate that way. And so even our challenges, even our wounds are part of our journey. They're part of the unraveling of perhaps a deeper potential that we wouldn't get to unless that arose. And so we can just, everything that we're going through in life is part of our journey, because it's bringing something. And that's whether that's universe, God, life, what, however you see it, but it's a trust in the unraveling.
That's beautiful. And you know, back to our conversation around fear too, is that willingness to trust and let go, whether there is nothing to fear on that basis, is there? You know, I work with a coach, Jamie Smart, for the last 2 years, and he helped me for a lot of learning to be courageous. And, you know, fear arises, well, do courage. And if fear arises and you do courage, well, you find confidence. And then you think of the Latin etymology of the word confidence, it's con fide, which is with faith. So fear into the heart, discover courage and discover faith. Okay, well, if I practice that over and over again, well, then life can be pretty possibly magical. As we come out of this box that we've conformed ourselves into a more expansive expression of who we are. Yeah, I am... it fascinates me. You know, being in these conversations fascinates me. And I do find that a lot of the people that I grew up with and used to know aren't interested in being in this conversation with me. So it's been quite isolating at times, and it's been lonely to realize that there are aspects of my old life that I have to let go and be okay with that. And then in the realization of the beauty of the space it creates to let new people to come into my life, and I'm prepared to let go of the old and realize that if people don't want to be in my life, that's okay with me, because the people I want in my life, I want them to want to be in my life.
Absolutely, 100%. And that's such a powerful realization as well, isn't it? We have to. It's so important. I don't have time to give energy to connections that don't nourish me, or where I have to put back on my mask, or I have to try in any capacity. I want to sit in a space of flow, and there's enough people in this world for me to find the ones that I connect most authentically with.
Yeah.
And not to be rude, yeah. Not to make others wrong, we are all different, and that's great, and that's beautiful, but we're not all meant for each other. And that's great, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And do you work with women as well as men, Ben?
No, I find that, and I'm really surrendering into this, but I'm finding myself more and more drawn and surrendering into the fact that actually it's more women who are drawn to wanting to work with me than men. And, you know, there's an element of, even saying that to you now, there's an element of my ego inflaming as I say that, because perhaps I want to be seen by men. Perhaps that's still where my validation ultimately lies, according to my ego. And I guess there's been an element of shame for me in that I was a mummy's boy. You know, I had a great relationship with my mum. I've always had a great relationship with my mum. And she was the divine that I saw. And, you know, it's more manly to be hanging out with your dad and to be seen by men and to be worshipped by men, to be the leader of men. But I'm really surrendering into the fact that there's an energy to me that women really gravitate to in working, in wanting to grow and learn. Perhaps that is because a lot of my work has been around empowering my feminine, re-empowering my feminine that I suppressed for so long, that was always very powerful within me. And I suppressed it, and I've learned to now celebrate it, and to be celebrated for my connection to my feminine is a really beautiful thing for me, because it's like everything I tried to suppress, to avoid, is now what makes me beautiful. And so perhaps there is this leaning into now, this understanding that women gravitate to that, and I'm just feeling into that space. And I, if I'm honest with you, Esmond, I don't want to condition myself to be like, I only work with men or I only work with women. Like, I have a real value, I think, in leading men back into their into the fullness of who they can be as a man, because so often men are stuck in that warrior. They've forgotten how to, or they don't even believe that there is a lover inside of them anymore. It's so disconnected. So to re-empower them, and not to take away the warrior within them, to feed that into a healthy space, but to empower the lover, and empowering the lover can help to soften the warrior, and will bring a beautiful balance to it. So I don't know if this is, excuse me, I don't know if this is one of my downfalls, but I'm not yet clear whether or not it's just men that I want to work with, just women that I want to work with, or if it's okay to work with them all and to fill into whatever is needed in that space. I don't know.
You know what? Thanks so much for sharing that you don't know. And brilliant that you don't know, frankly. Why do you need to know in this moment? So I honor that, and you. And I'm asking myself the same question, Ben, to be quite honest with you. And you know, I've had a short conversation before about the potential of bringing men and women into a space together, and I'm really interested to follow up on that, to be in a space that is held for the truths to emerge, for universal truths to emerge that we all need to hear and see in one another. Feels to me like a salve, like an ointment that can be really deeply, deeply, deeply healing. And it's something that I'm hoping to explore with you as we go forward, to see what that can look like. Because at the end of the day, we're human beings, and we're sensitive human feeling beings. And I've worked with women before. I've worked with women therapists. I've worked with women coaches. I've worked with women facilitators, and I've had profound, profound healing. And I've also had extraordinary experience with elders and mentors and medicine men. So for me, it isn't necessarily gender specific. And yet what I see in the men's circles that we hold is that the strength of brotherhood and the experience of a man that's leading a safe space is quite foreign for many of the men that are coming in, having had fathers who were perhaps deeply skewed in an unhealthy direction with the warrior, who are leading from authority and creating fear in their family environments. So that, you know, that element of safety and softness and tenderness is it's powerful. It's been very powerful for me too. But at the same time, I'm also hankering to bring that conversation and the depth of that sharing with women too, because I have so much to learn from women as well. So I feel you. Yeah, very much.
Like for both of us, it's just returning back to the humanness, man or woman. You know, it's just overcoming fear and returning back into what is innately within us. That's a human experience. And, you know, men have different work to do than women, if we're generalizing. But it's ultimately all returning back to what is ultimately, Esmond, and the more I go on this journey, the more I unravel it, the more I unpick it. I'm really in a phase now where I'm just... ultimately, all of it is returning just back to a place of presence, of true presence, and understanding what presence is, what true presence is. Because in that place of presence, true presence, we are just who we are. And that is freedom. And very few of us live in a state of presence.
I hear you loud and clear. And for me, it's been a process of purifying everything that's taken me away from presence. And that for me as a man has meant being willing to rage in a safe way. It's been willing to feel the toxic shame that bound me for so long, to cry and cry and cry the tears of grief that I needed to cry. And then as I emerged, there's a, ooh, wow. There's just an openness to life. There's space, there's receptivity, there's connection, there's aliveness. So I don't know if I'm unique in this, and that it seems to be that the path I'm treading or the path that I've trodden is filled with a process of purifying. But I know that that is my way free. Yeah,
I believe that's the route for us all. But how many of us are brave enough, or how many of us are aware enough, or how many of us have the opportunity? How many of us go through the actual pain of being willing to do that? Because you know that, you know, feeling into grief, feeling into the shame, feeling into all of this stuff is painful. It's way easier not to do it in that moment, right? If we're connected to how we want to feel in that moment, it's easier not to. But that is the unraveling of freedom. All the time we don't do that. We're stuck in our patterns.
Well, we are. And I spoke about this with Jamie Catter. It's like, come and do the work when you're not feeling like you need it. Just come along and have a play. See it as like a curious exploration, because from that place of receptivity, you know, huge insights and transformation and healing can occur. And I'm reminded of that quote by Anais Nin. I'm not sure if I pronounced her name right. But she said, and the time arrived when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. And that to me is like, it's so pertinent to my experience, when it's like, okay, fuck this, it's too painful. I can't keep on going this way. So I've got to go pop. I've got to allow whatever's coming through to come through. And I don't know where it's going. I've got no idea where it's going, Ben. But, you know, this conversation, this moment is the next step of my journey.
Me too. Otherwise, it's this is all part of the healing. It reminds me of the journey. It reminds me of why I'm doing the work. It reminds me, it enlivens me. I can't have these conversations on my own. I find it very difficult to have these conversations on my own. It's actually one, sorry to go on tangent, but just to add this, it's one of the challenges I have on social media. If I just put something there and say, right, just talk about this, I find it very hard to bring it alive. But if I'm in conversation with somebody, and it's just authentically there, but I don't want to perform. I want it to flow.
100% the same. 100% the same. Well, if you ever need a prompt, you can give me a call and I'd be very happy to ask you a question to get you moving. But for me, that's the aliveness, you see, Ben. That's the aliveness, because we're alive in this moment together. We're connected. So the conversation flows from connection. I'm not regurgitating a script to you. There are moments where I might just waver out of connection, feel a little bit of fear. Am I doing this right? But I can bring it back to where we are again. And there's beauty to that. But Pete and I were so funny. Pete was here a few weeks ago and we were doing some videos. So he's asking me questions and I was rabbit in the headlights. I was like, you asked me a question, I stopped performing. I put on my soldier's hat and it was hilarious. He was judging me and laughing. He said, you're doing this podcast and you can't do it. And I said, okay, brother, you try. So he went outside the camera and I asked him a question. And it was like, it's for 15 minutes and then peals of laughter on the floor just to watch what happens when we're being observed. To come back to that sort of need to people please or put on a face. Well, what a practice that is to watch oneself. And, you know, being seen and being heard, I really encourage, you know, the men I'm working with to create videos of themselves. I give them a topic to speak into, to record what's a lie. So we're trying to get rid of the detritus and the emotional debris first. So they get an opportunity to be vulnerable about what's in the way. But then as the power is emerging and energy is running through them and they're, I guess, touching into the potential of what their authentic voice might look and feel like. And that starts to come through and then they can see themselves in that. They get to go through all of the judgment, the shame, the fear and be like, well, hang on. I like that guy. I like the sound of that voice. It changes. And it's really energetic, right? We're bursting out of this invisible veil into the truth of who we are, but it's invisible.
Yeah.
The way through is feeling.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We do all like that part of us, but the journey to get there takes real bravery. And if we can to have enough instant gratification around us all the time, then the pull is not enough, because it's easier to go and get drunk. It's easier to go and have sex. It's easier to go and have some drugs. It's easier to go on holiday or easier to do all these things that can just nullify that for the moment.
It's bizarre. It's bizarre, isn't it? If we really think about what we're saying, it's bizarre.
We're just always, I mean, I'm drawn to the quote that says, make easy decisions, live a hard life. Make hard choices, live an easy life. And that's what it ultimately comes down to. In the moment, it feels easier, but you're just setting yourself up to live outside of inner peace.
Yeah.
All your peace lives outside of you.
Yeah.
As you make the hard decisions that truly serve you, I come to my other kind of, this is my sort of guiding phrase, and it says, don't sacrifice what you want most for what you want now.
Yeah.
And that for me is the principle for me to live by. Of course, sometimes I fall into the now and I enjoy that moment, and it's not in line with actually probably my deepest values, but it's a moment of just balance, let's say. But ultimately, the majority of the time, I'm trying to live true to who I want to be most, make those decisions, and they can be hard in that moment, but they make life easier in the long run.
What's the next hard choice you're going to make?
It all comes down to, you know, the sun is shining right now. The beach is 15 minutes away from me. I would love to be doing all that, but I've got right now I'm in warrior mode. You know, it's focus, dedication, clarity. What do I need to get done?
Yeah.
And there's a long to-do list. So for me right now, it's being dedicated to what is immediately required of me.
Ben, man, thank you so much. It's been lovely. It's really lovely to be with you and talk and speak. I really appreciate your time and your wisdom and your openness and your rawness and your truth. Thank you.
Lots of love. Thank you, brother.
If you lived your life like you want your life to be, did you pass the blame, get lost on a runaway train?
The Privileged Man is a men's movement that we founded in 2021 to create safe and connected spaces for men to gather and remember how to speak the courageous language of their hearts to live more sovereign and truthful lives. Men are reclaiming the power to choose their way of being, guided by their innate wisdom in the place of societal dictates. A brotherhood of consciously connected men is forming, and we welcome you to join us. If you'd like to learn more about the Brotherhood, please visit theprivilegedman.com, and we look forward to welcoming you.